know, the Pulitzer Prize actually had its roots going back to 1990 when we founded the newspaper. And one of the first big stories we encountered was that not only are our lakes sedimenting in from soil erosion, including Storm Lake, God made it 26 feet deep, and we filled it into 7 feet deep. And that's happening all over northern Iowa and southern Minnesota. And at the same time, we were a story was confronting us that our rivers were running toxic with nitrate from nitrogen fertilizer. And the Des Moines Water Works sued three Northwest Iowa counties in 2015, you know, some 25 years later. Meantime, we were doing this story about our lakes sedimenting in, our rivers running high with toxins, including phosphorus, and such that the city of Des Moines can't drink the water out of the Raccoon or Des Moines rivers anymore. And they built North America's largest nitrate removal facility, $100 million facility. And so we wrote a series of editorials calling for a mediation between agriculture and the environment and more transparency in who's actually funding the debate in Iowa over agriculture and the environment. And you'll find that it's the fertilizer industry and the chemical industry, you know, that they own the Iowa legislature and they own our conversation. And we were that's what the editorials were about that won a Pulitzer Prize. When we won the Pulitzer, a guy who grew up on a northern Iowa hog farm near Buffalo Center in Winnebago County, Jerry Recious, he went off to fame and fortune as the director of photography for Anthony Bourdain, the noted chef on CNN.
Seattle, a city with a collective identity constantly in flux, always changing.
Been all over the world, and he reads a headline in the New York Times out in Brooklyn that morning saying Northwest Iowa newspaper, tiny paper, wins Pulitzer Prize. So, you know, it turned his head, and he called me up and said, hey, you know, I'm coming out to visit my parents. Could I just hang around and shoot you for an afternoon? And I said, sure. And that's how it came about.
Well, and you still have a good relationship with them. I read somewhere where you've bonded over your love of hippie music. Do you have a certain artist that you guys really like to listen to?
Well, you know, Jerry and I, we just toured Chicago, Detroit, with Beth Levison, the other director. We just toured Chicago, Detroit, Minneapolis, and all over Iowa on a 3-day or on a 10-day swing, actually. But anyway, Jerry and I were able to take a little dive down to Motown, Hitsville, USA, where Barry Gordy held forth, and we went to Aretha Franklin's home church, and so we took a soul excursion in Detroit, so that was great.
What you want?
Yeah, Jerry and I hit it off really well. We're about the same age. He went to the University of Iowa, was in the Peace Corps, and then, you know, he got Beth involved. Beth's a top flight producer from New York, one of the great indie film producers. And, you know, we became good friends. And they, you know, it was like, you know, they've been working with us since 2018.
And are you going to continue to do more of these premiere events, talking about the issues that you really feel are important?
Yeah, so, you know, we're screening in Sioux City Thursday night, and I'll be there, and my wife Dolores will be there afterwards, and I think my brother John, and maybe my son Tom, who's flying back from Milwaukee and Columbia, Missouri, where he was doing live appearances with the documentary. And so we hope to be there all Thursday night.
Civic engagement, sure.
The health of democracy, you know, the health of agriculture and environment. And I'd like to be able to take that attention and channel it into those questions.
Who knows where else, maybe L.A., New York.
So it's been quite a whirlwind for us.
Well, this movie is getting a lot of great buzz. I mean, the American Film Institute, their Docs Awards, gave it the Festival Audience Award for Best Feature. A Washington Post columnist said it felt like they were living in Storm Lake. The Hollywood Reporter loved the film as well. I mean, do you think this thing could actually, you know, win an Oscar? I haven't seen it yet. I can't wait to see it.
Well, it should, of course. I don't know. I don't know how you win an Oscar or an Emmy or even a Pulitzer. There's a certain sort of magic involved, I think, that happens because, you know, it gets that. I've actually judged the Pulitzer Prizes for after I won it. And, you know, you get down to splitting hairs. Who's better, Michael Jordan or LeBron James? You know, and so I don't know what it takes to get one of those gold statuettes. But it deserves one, in my view, because it really is an accurate picture, I think, a portrayal of small town Iowa and, you know, a newspaper and, you know, and how these communities govern themselves.
In a small northwest Iowa town, the Storm Lake Times weaves the fabric of the community in large ways and small.
Yeah.
Right.
We're on deadline. We're ready to put it on the page.
I get real uptight about deadlines.
Readers decide our future, not any branch of government.
We have happy stories about all types of people.
It's a really in-depth look at the Iowa caucuses, at a guy who works at the garbage dump and recycling plant, running for the Alta City Council. Stories like that really illustrate rural Americans engaging in their communities.
There's still a place for print journalism, especially in smaller communities. Or what are your thoughts? I mean, what do you think of the current state of journalism, and where do you think it might head?
Well, print journalism is, I think, a question that's almost distinct from the question of journalism generally. And there are so many forms of journalism, including this film, which I consider to be journalism, that are finding whole new ways of storytelling, and that are, you know, but what's, and print is really just a reflection of community journalism, and that's what's in danger. There's tremendous reporting in silos on agriculture or the environment or technology or real estate, but, you know, that all comes together in a newspaper where that serendipity occurs, where somebody who's interested in agriculture reads a story about the environment and makes a connection between the two, and or they read about a neighbor who's active in they're a Democrat reading about a Republican neighbor who is doing something good for the community, and it builds a bond between those people. And print is really a manifestation of community journalism because that's how it's existed for the last couple hundred years. But we're in a rapid transformation to digital, even now at the community level. But we have an elderly audience in Iowa, and especially rural Iowa. And so print will remain for as far as I can see, but increasingly our readership is switching to cell phones, and print is not long for this world.
Most people, all my friends, they use a smartphone to get the news updates, and even television is old by the time you watch the 5 or 6 o'clock news.
Yeah, and I was just on this, swing through the Midwest over 10 days, and I saw exactly two people reading printed newspapers throughout that 10 days. But they were all checking their cell phones, and they were certainly abreast of the news. You look up and there's a TV monitor with cable news on 24/7. You can't avoid it. But, you know, nobody is accessing it through print, which is kind of the ultimate serendipitous form of journalism, because you flip a page and see a completely different story that you didn't even know you'd be interested in. And that's what we'll lose.
No, I think that's true. And, you know, like Siouxland Public Media, we're a public radio station, and we actually, of course, rely on donors to pay for our programming. And I know on social media, speaking of social media, I did, you know, check out your GoFundMe that you had for your newspaper at the time.
Yeah.
And actually contributed. I shared it. It's like raised about $29,000. Is that enough to keep you guys going? Because I know you did an interview with Fresh Air that said that you actually started to do Social Security to make sure that your employees were paid.
Well, yeah, both my brother John and I are on Social Security, and John continues to work, as do I. Just so I could get myself off the payroll. And we got a PPP loan, which, you know, or grant, as it were, that, you know, really bailed us out during the pandemic year of 2020. But still, the first half of this year was really very bad. And the advertising has not returned to pre-pandemic levels. And it was heading down a slope before that. So we started something called the Western Iowa Journalism Foundation, along with our friends at the Carroll Times-Herald, the Jefferson Herald, and La Prensa, and the Coon Rapids Enterprise. These are all independent family-owned newspapers in Western Iowa that are having a rough go of it, frankly. And so we said, you know, we're going to really need philanthropy to replace that lost advertising that just isn't coming back. And especially as retail and rural retail decline, you know, if you're living in Holstein, it's easier to order from Amazon.com than it is to drive to Sioux City. And so that's what's happening. And that hurts the Sioux City Journal. It hurts the Stormlight Times. So we got together with these papers and we formed this nonprofit foundation approved by the IRS, where you can make tax-deductible donations just as you can for public radio. And then the funds go to these independent newspapers, and we hope to build it so we can bring many more newspapers into the fold and support their journalism. And so we want to be able to support reporting, special reporting positions on agriculture and the environment, crime and courts, education that can make our newspapers stronger. So it's going to take a lot more than a GoFundMe page, in short. And we're talking to Microsoft and Facebook and Google and all the companies that have disrupted our business model to see if they can seed this fund for us. And then eventually hope that readers will recognize that, you know, we offer value, that is, we offer facts in an age of disinformation, and that there's a value in that for democracy and for their own well-being. And we're starting to see that readers do value it. And it's just like they value public radio and public television because, you know, they play it straight.
And actually, speaking of public television, this will be on PBS coming up in November as well. So if people can't make it to the film festival to see it in Sioux City or at their nearby theater, they can see it on TV as well.
Yeah, it'll be on a PBS program called Independent Lens on November 15th. So we're really excited about that. And this project has been brought along from the early stages by PBS. And you know, it wouldn't have been possible without them. And that's where those donations are so crucial. You know, this rural voice likely wouldn't have been heard were it not for the donations of people from Sioux City to PBS.
Now, I know you're really busy right now, you know, with this film and getting the word out about it. But when it comes to journalism, is there a story that you have not told yet that you really would like to dive into, something you would like to give the people reading the Stormlight Times?
Well, there's all sorts of stories that we want to pursue. I think the most urgent story that we're on right now is climate change and how it's affecting agriculture and food production. And how... you know, this is not just an occasional drought we are going through this year. This is a 50-year phenomenon that's the worst that we've seen in probably over a millennium, according to climate scientists. And there are real world implications right here in the here and now about climate change and agriculture. And that's really the story that we need to devote our energy to, that I wish we could do a lot more of. But it's going to change Iowa in fundamental ways over the next decade even. And that's a story that has not been sufficiently told.
Well, and it's hard too when you have a small staff. You try to do it all, and you do it all at your newspaper.
Well, I'm doing a lot less than I used to. you get old, you don't have the vim and vigor that my son Tom does.
Yeah, well, and it's interesting too, because like in Storm Lake, I know when you started the newspaper in 1990, I actually had attended Buena Vista when it was still a college a year earlier. And the community, I mean, I just can't believe how much it's changed. And we actually interviewed former police chief Mark Prosser, who said that when he retired, he was really proud of the diversity of the community and how it's grown.
90% of our elementary school enrollment are children of color, and that's mainly immigrant children. Again, mainly from Latin America, and then secondarily from Asia, Southeast Asia. And there's Cubans, Sudanese, Hmong, Burmese, people from Jalisco, Mexico to Guatemala, all over the world come to Storm Lake to work in meatpacking. And, you know, some communities do it better than others. I'd like to think Storm Lake is one of the better communities, where because of Buena Vista University, they're given full ride scholarships to first generation college students. So these young Latinos or Sudanese are matriculating through Iowa Central Community College, through Buena Vista University, and becoming teachers in our schools. Our police force now is home growing its own officers of color. And, you know, the lid could have blown off this community at any time, and it didn't. And it has in other communities, in Nebraska, southern Minnesota. But Storm Lake has tried to bring people along together, and I think it's paying off.